All right. So, welcome to Larry and Gina carrying on.
It's Gina and Larry carrying on. Which I give you top billing, for God's sake.
Are you serious?
Yes, it's Gina and Larry carrying on.
God, I feel like such an asshole.
It's my freaking website, my t-shirt business, but yet I am giving you, you know, the title of the lead.
Well, I think it's only appropriate. I think you go in alphabetical order to be, like, you have to be, you're going to be politically correct. You don't want to go in alphabetical order. I would like to apologize in advance for my voice because I just turned 30, so I left my dignity and my voice somewhere along the wayside.
In the last 15 of those 30 years.
No. I really knocked this 30 out of the park. And it wasn't like a big, like, blowout 30 where you're, like, in Vegas and there's strippers and, like, you know, crack.
I mean, I never understood that.
The big
why? Life. Yeah, why we have to do those? I leave the country on my birthday.
Yeah,
on big birthdays.
And I love that about you. I love that you went to Japan for one day.
It was two.
You got on a plane,
Larry. I went to Tokyo for 2 days.
You got on a plane, Larry. You got off the plane. You had a cocktail, and you got back on a plane.
Well, it was more than just one cocktail.
Well, thank God.
It was at the Hyatt, the Park Hyatt in Tokyo, the bar where they filmed the Lost in Translation. I wasn't staying at the Hyatt. I was staying at the $100 hotel down the street.
Oh, appearances are
because one has to stay at the $100 hotel down the street if they're going to buy themselves martinis at the Hyatt for their birthday.
You are like a Hyatt hopper. You are either at the Park Hyatt, the Pike Hyatt. You are a Hyatt hopper.
Well, there's the Hyatt in Palm Springs.
Oh, you frequent that as well?
I haven't been there since I moved to Palm Springs part-time. But that's great. They have this big outdoor bar with a fire pit.
Yeah.
And then on the weekends, they usually have entertainment. And then that's a great thing one needs to know about Palm Springs, too, is that Thursdays through Sundays from 11 a.m. to 1 a.m., they have the free Buzz Bus.
Oh, so you can like, get on the bus and drive.
Yeah, it goes from downtown Palm Springs, it circles Palm Canyon and Indian Canyon up to, I think it's Villa Escuela is the name of the street. But it's free, and the buses come by every 15 minutes. They say it's, you know, like for tourists, to help tourists get around easier and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But really, Thursday through Sunday, what might that be? The weekend.
Yes.
What is 11 a.m. till 1 a.m.? What are people doing late in the evening?
Drinking.
And then they can take the bus and don't have to worry about drinking. That's a pretty cool thing. I think a lot of cities, you know, could have that.
You know what else I like about Palm Springs is the misters.
The Mr. MISTERS, not the MR,
not
period.
Not the misters of the misses. The actual misters.
Yeah, those are pretty cool.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so you know who else hasn't been to Palm Springs? There's yours truly.
I know, you haven't been there yet.
I've been so busy doing God knows what.
You've been so busy being unemployed.
No, well, unemployed has such a negative connotation. I think it's more like business ventures. I mean, I'm partaking in different entrepreneurial...
Exploring entrepreneurial goals.
Okay. God, that sounds great.
I like that, yeah. Or opportunities. Sure. Exploring entrepreneurial goals and opportunities. There you go.
Or you just say, when people ask you what you do, you just say, oh, I do freelance. And then everyone's, oh, okay,
oh,
that's
yeah.
fine.
So you're a bartender 5 days a week in about an hour and a half.
No, I think
but that's great. But that's wonderful because that's my whole concept of life is to do what you do whatever you have to do what it is that you want to do.
Sure.
And so many people live these lives for 30 or 40 years doing a job they can't stand because they
can't.
And then not that they don't want to have children or a family or whatever, but it's the house. It's the stainless steel appliances, it's the two cars in the driveway, all that kind of stuff. And that's not a bad thing.
No.
Unless someone is really like, wow, I really wish I were doing this other thing. And I know people who have done that. They have the marriage, they have the kids, but they choose to, let's take the family to Europe and let's see what happens there. Or they, you know, they explore...
Yeah.
They expose their children to travel and different things. It's not all about just fitting into this box and then staying there for 30 or 40 years and realizing, oh, wow, what not that it was bad, but why didn't we do some other thing?
Well, I think a huge part of that too is kind of just going through the motions. Like, I know it's easier to take the safe road. It's always easier. But what I've come to find is most people that I've talked to who are super supportive of, like, all of our creative endeavors, are like, well, I would love to do that, but I'm just waiting until I retire. And I'm like, yeah. Why are you waiting till you retire? And everybody I talked to is like, well, I'm so miserable at my job. And I was like, well, you can, and this is something, did you watch that Jim Carrey commencement speech?
No, I didn't.
Oh, my God. It was fucking phenomenal. And it was, like, right at my tipping point where I was like, should I just fucking give up? Or should I actually, like, stick with this? And he said something that I thought was sort of profound. And he said, you can absolutely fail at something that you don't love. So you might as well take a chance on what you do. And I think there's something to be said about that because I was in corporate America for so long, and that just doesn't fit my personality. Like, I don't like to be micromanaged. You know, and it's funny because when you look at, think about elementary school, and, like, you have to be there at a certain time, you have to, you know, you're sitting at a desk all day, and it's kind of like, I don't know, just prepping you to fucking sit at a desk all day in a cubicle. And I don't know, I feel like that just stifles creativity. And there's so many people that want to do great things. And I have to tell you, it wasn't until after I left my job that, like, there was all this creative, like, energy that was flowing. It was absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And I wish more people would embrace that kind of thing. Because, you know, you can walk outside and get fucking hit by a car. Not to be so drab.
Yeah.
You know?
I know. I mean, that's what I've done. I did corporate America for a while in several different ways. And just realized that, yeah, it just didn't work.
Yeah.
I couldn't be one place from 8 to 5 every day.
Exactly.
Some people may call it some form of ADD, but it's like, you know, I can't be in one place. You know, I've written a book on, you know, travel stories. I cannot sit down and write a chapter or write 3 pages nonstop.
No.
I write a paragraph. I'm up and I'm walking around, I do some dishes. I sit back down, I write another, you know, 3 sentences or another 2 or 3
totally.
Paragraphs, and I'm watering the plants, or I'm going for a walk. I cannot lock myself in a room and do that one thing for all the time, because for me, the creativity, I need to move.
But that's a huge part of it, and they say, like, you moving around actually helps create, like, get the creative juices flowing.
Well, because, I mean, that's true for, you know, depression.
Sure.
Physical activity.
Sure.
Get up, get going, you know, get the endorphins going,
sure.
Go for a walk, you know. And then, so, of course, I believe that too, that it also works for that creative process.
Yeah. Well, because I'm the same way. I can't sit longer than, God, on an airplane, you know, when I travel with me, it's a fucking nightmare.
Oh, shit, I booked you a seat right next to me on the way to Beirut. What was I thinking? I should put you in another fucking cabin.
Well,
oh, my God.
I just need, like, a bar of Xanax.
At least you're small. So when you're squirming around in the seat, you won't be running into me. I'm like, oh, fuck, I just saw that. I should have put you on the other side of the airplane.
Jesus. Okay, so
and
that's...
And here I wanted to be close, forgetting that we're going to be together for, like, 6 days. Well,
10.
No.
10.
What trip are you on?
Yeah,
okay, this is going to be a problem. We are going to Beirut fucking Lebanon. If you are not going to read any of the information I give you, we're going to be in trouble.
Okay.
We are going to be in some big fucking trouble.
I love you.
We are leaving on a Wednesday at 7 o'clock in the evening.
I didn't know.
Due to the time. Wait, there's a thing called an itinerary that I mailed you. I emailed you. We leave on a Wednesday night from LAX at 7:10. We do not arrive in Beirut with the time changes and everything until 3 o'clock in the morning on Friday. So it's almost like there's 3 days there. But we have Friday, all day Friday. Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night. Monday night in Beirut, but we leave, have to go to the airport at like something like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday from Beirut. We still arrive home back in L.A. on Tuesday.
Okay, so again, you must have not been listening when I said I don't like to be micromanaged.
I'm not trying to micromanage you. I just would like you to read and have an awareness of some of the information I have passed along to you.
All I know is that I'm going to Beirut in September.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Okay.
And I couldn't be more excited about it. I'm absolutely thrilled. But I kind of just, I'm like more of the seat of my pants.
No. Well, so am I. I mean, I'm going to see them.
Someone has to plan.
Well, I mean, I plan this stuff. I plan, you know, I book the reservations, I book the hotel. After that, we just need to know where we need to be to get there and get home.
Okay.
And obviously,
cocktails.
Cocktails. Working on that already. And then we need to have a broad idea of the customs and what to do to not get in trouble. Okay. And that's just anywhere.
But there, so I already watched the Anthony Bourdain episode about Beirut. The takeaway was it's much more liberal than obviously the rest of the Middle East,
right?
In that whole area. But then there's sort of some burbs, some suburbs.
Right. Well, and that's what when I tell people that when I'm going to Beirut, they have sort of this like shocked look in their eyes or that sort of thing. And like I said, anywhere I've traveled in the world, I don't want to know too much. I want to know a little bit about what's going on there. I don't need to read a history book of 1,000 pages about where I'm going. Or no. I don't need to, you know, I've been to Paris twice. I've never been to the Louvre. I've been on the grounds, but I just haven't ever made it inside. Oh, to the web. But I want to have a rough idea of where things are and what to do and what to see, but not have it be really strict.
Sure, sure, sure.
To keep, you know.
And I think a big part of that also is just like, when you travel, the whole point of traveling and to not be like an American is to sort of assimilate, right? So you want to go where everybody else is. Not where the tourists go. Fuck the tourists.
Right.
You can spot an American from a mile away. They are fucking loud, obnoxious, usually overweight.
That would be us.
Yeah, but not overweight.
Wearing white tennis shoes.
Or the sandals with socks.
Oh, the sandals.
There's always a fucking camera around your neck. When I was
some
in
sort of fanny pack or you know,
when I was in Japan.
Very, I don't know, I would say very practical.
Or just nightmare.
Yeah.
I just was like, I remember being 15 years old backpacking through Japan and I'm with a whole bunch of other younger girls because I studied Japanese when I was a kid. And I distinctly remember being in Kyoto at like some sort of monument and seeing these typical Americans get off this bus and they are horrendous. I was embarrassed and they're yelling and the kids are screaming for McDonald's. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is, you're in Japan. You came all the way over here. And you're going to eat McDonald's? I mean, I kind of, like, even at 15, I was able to comprehend how fucked up that was.
Although, while we were in Shanghai.
Okay, but that was.
Going to that Morton's when we got back into Shanghai. Now, that was, you know, that was a godsend. But, yeah, my nieces and nephews, my nephew has traveled. And then I tell people, if you want to eat at a McDonald's in Paris, eat at the McDonald's in Paris just because you're curious as to the flavors, that you know, it's an investigative thing.
Sure.
To see, does it taste the same? How do they do, you know, a quarter pound of a cheese in Paris?
They have the metric system.
Right. And you know, and do it for that, not because that's the only place you're gonna eat because you're afraid to eat anything else or nothing else is gonna be good or whatever. But you know, but back to people when they go ask me, you know, look at me like I'm crazy about, you know, going to Beirut. Some of the little research, you know, Googling it. Like you said, the Arabs, everyone in that part of the world goes there to get off. It's sort of like what I'm coming up with. I get the sense it is like the Vegas of the Middle East. Yes, there are issues around the borders, but it's like people tend to go there because they can get their groove on away from everything else. And why can they do that? Why can they get their groove on there and be comfortable? Because it's a city, an environment, Christians, Muslims,
everybody's
in a Shiite, everyone's getting along. And what is in the Anthony Bourdain show, they haven't had a president for how long was it? So they don't have a president for the country at this particular time, but people are getting along. So I think that's why it is that Vegas of the Middle East, because everyone can go there and they can somehow
everybody wants to
get along.
Up, you know?
Yeah.
Well, then that's something you said for the rest of the Middle East. If other people from the Middle East are coming in, well, I think a lot of people are immigrating there as well because like people are there.
Oh, yeah. Well, and you know, then Poppy and I are going to Dubai in November. So I had to double check because if you've been to Israel, you're not getting into Dubai. I mean, if you have an Israel stamp, if something turns up on your passport that you've been to Israel, they don't let you into Dubai. And so I was like, oh, I forgot to check Lebanon. So that's how I started checking that other stuff and found out about it sort of like a playground for other countries.
Are you
because I will be able to go into
Dubai. In the Middle East twice in the same year?
I guess I'll find out. That's what I told Poppy. I said, I've checked, and you know I should be able to get in. But if they throw that rule at me, this is where one's American Express card comes in handy. Because you know Poppy's going to leave.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if we're going through immigration and they don't let me in, he's going to say, see you later, and I'll say, hey, I'll see you later, you know, meet you back in L.A. I'll head to Barcelona, or Paris, or maybe Ireland. I'll visit Nick and Ann, whatever, you know, see ya. Because he would not to be mean, but just because both of us could handle ourselves and I wouldn't be freaked out, it actually might be a little bit more of an adventure if they wouldn't let me in.
My God, that's so funny. Well, I think it's going to be a great trip. And you know what? And this is actually, I was thinking about this the other day, because I was kind of upset that when we were in Shanghai, we didn't go to any really good restaurants. I think, because one of my girlfriends lived in Shanghai, she wrote for an expat magazine. She lived in the French, not quarter, but you know,
yeah.
I think it was. And she was so upset that like we ate shitty food. She's like, there is so much great food in Shanghai. And I would like to go, I didn't want to go back with her.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, we didn't have the opportunity to really go other places in Shanghai. I mean, weren't we didn't know one another, but weren't you and Poppy and I on the same flight from LA to Shanghai?
I don't know.
Got in on Tuesday night.
Yes.
Yeah, so we were on the same airplane, but we didn't know each other. So Poppy and I went out, and that's where we went to this club that my friend Larry had recommended. And, you know, the food was, there was pasta, and there was, like, stuff that they put out, with, you know, during cocktail, you know, appetizer time. And then we had that from Shanghai, and we're gone for, like, 5 days.
Right.
On a tour. We came back on Sunday. I had food poisoning.
Everyone.
And then the other, that wouldn't have been the night for me to go out somewhere. And then we had Monday when we went out shopping and had, you know, you had to have that handbag. And
okay, personal.
We were kind of like in Chinatown and everything. And that we went to Morton's. And the reason we went to Morton's is because we had had such horrible food the entire time.
Such
we needed something that we could rely on. So that Monday night probably would have been our opportunity to try something. But I think all of us were so desperate.
Well,
of not trying, we were like, no, we need something that we can count on that's going to be good. We can't, you know.
I have 14 sliders in one sitting. I have fucking 14 sliders. I was almost like an orphan child sticking them in my purse in my pockets, like an asshole. Because there was one, you know what really set me off? And I am an adventurous person, just in general.
No.
But I don't see the nutritional value in duck beak.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, that's like me chewing on my fingernails.
Yeah.
I don't want the beak.
Yeah.
Like, I almost feel like it was an accident, because I don't even think the Chinese, I could see them grinding it up and maybe snorting it. But I don't know if I could see them really.
What I'm picturing of, there were what, six of us sitting at Morton's? And we're having, it's like, they have happy hour martinis, we're having cocktails, and all of us were like zeroed in on the door to the kitchen, waiting for more platters of sliders to come out.
Yeah.
We're like basically running after and attacking the poor server, like, bring them over here, bring those sliders over here.
But also, like, how did you even find out about that? Because that was serious insider training. Yeah, but you, like, you knew someone who knew a guy.
Well, no, it was just on the flight. It was on the flight over. Michael, you know, Poppy and I were sitting across from one another in aisle seats. Next to me was a young Chinese boy.
Weird.
You know, like 20-ish,
weird.
20-something.
Weird, there was a young Chinese boy.
He was a college student. Spoke a little bit of English, mostly Chinese.
Mm.
At the window was a Chinese-American woman who had, like, gone to UCLA, married a Chinese man and went back and forth between LA and Shanghai.
Right.
She's the one who said, do yourselves a favor. She goes, Monday through Friday, Morton's in the financial district has a martini or has happy hour, and they have free sliders.
Right.
So that's how I knew about going there, was by, you know, talking with her. And yeah, that's something that I try and get across. I hopefully get across in my book, and when I talk to travel about people, and I'm doing it, talking about it on my blog, as we're talking about it here, some of the best travel information just comes from regular everyday people.
Yeah.
And if you've done a little research,
yeah,
you either clarify it or,
yeah,
you know, I have it on my blog now. You know, Mike, the Lebanese jeweler.
I know.
You know, the woman that I, you know, came to the gym, she hooks me up with this guy who goes back and forth between LA area and Beirut. Not a problem. Have his phone number now, have his email address. Told that he's the one who suggested where we stay.
Yeah.
And you just, you know, part of it is having enough travel savvy or enough street smarts,
sure,
to realize that you're not being bullshitted by somebody.
Sure.
You bring in the person who passed the information along to you, and you may say, okay, they're crazy.
Right.
But not in this situation. Because yeah, they have recognized that this person is okay, or someone, information comes to you and you're like, okay, that person's crazy. They have attached me to another crazy. Yeah, no, I'm not going with that information.
Yeah, cut ties. Cut ties. Totally.
But that comes with, you know, just that having that sense of adventure, doing the adventure, sure, bringing together what we've been taught or what we've taught to, or we think we're supposed to believe, or what we've read, and going there and actually putting it all together and being like, oh, okay, I can see where someone would have this interpretation. I can also see where someone would have this interpretation.
Sure.
You know, but for people that have other total complete fear about traveling anywhere, that's my thing. If you're like, oh, it's so, you know,
what's so scary?
Isn't there
scared your heat?
Yeah.
Jesus.
It's like, you know, it could happen here.
At least in other countries, I don't understand what they're fucking saying.
Yes.
You know, you could be like, I'm gonna kill you, and I'm like, oh, well, all right, well.
And that's, yeah, and that's, yeah, you know, and that's another, a way to get away from things. If you go to a foreign country and maybe you have a television in the room, but it's not attached to cable.
Yeah.
So you're not getting CNN. Or maybe you look at CNN for a little bit and get something, but it's also a great way to just get the chatter out of your head.
Oh, fuck the chatter.
Yeah.
That chatter actually used to sound like my parents. I only called my parents to death. Actually, you know, it's funny. So I had a conversation with my parents a couple days ago, because now they're supportive of my creative endeavors.
Yes.
Because, you know, the fear of loss, of losing my only daughter. So my dad and I had a long conversation with my fucked up voice on Sunday, the day after my birthday, which, oh, I have to tell you about the day after my birthday. But we had a long conversation, and he asked me if he could be on my podcast, and my heart melted. And then it got
like a weird
deja vu, because I remember years ago when I was living with my parents and actually talking about doing a podcast with my dad. This was probably 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. And now that I actually have a podcast and now he's going to be on it, I was like, oh my God, how funny that how the universe does things like that for you. Okay, rewind. Now let me fucking tell you about the fucking day after
my Papa Rouge on your podcast.
Oh, you'll die.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. He wants to hash out about relationships. I think it'll just be fucking hilarious. So I had a really rough birthday. It was great. You know, like, for some reason, when you turn 30, like, everyone thinks there has to be all this heavy drinking, which there was. I mean, it was a lot of beveraging. And I have to tell you, like, you don't bounce back like you used to.
No.
I don't know what that's all about. I have no idea. Like, because I remember being, like, 20 and drinking all night and going to work the next day, like, and all I needed was a bagel and a shot of espresso.
It's called a saturated liver.
Anyway.
It's getting older. The body is changing. Tell me. I'm 56.
Yeah. Okay.
But go ahead.
So, anyway. So, the day after my birthday, my actual birthday, we actually ended up going to bed at like 10 because the night before we drank until like 4 in the morning. I made my living room, which, and you know my living room, Larry, looks like an Italian parlor.
Bordello.
It's a bordello.
Yeah.
But I managed to.
Not that that's a bad thing.
No, I think it's aesthetically pleasing. Anyway, I moved my coffee table. I blew up a fucking air mattress, pushed the couch and the two chairs together and made a fort like I was 9 years old. It was actually quite nostalgic. Got every pillow and cushion and just piled it up, and I watched with my girlfriend. Not my actual girlfriend, but considering.
A friend who's a girl.
Correct. But although considering how things have been going, just kidding. Okay, so we watched Bridget Jones' Diary 1, Bridget Jones' Diary 2, and I actually felt like Bridget Jones.
Well, there's a way to punish yourself when you're turning 30.
I know.
I think you should have watched.
Wait, I'm not done.
Okay.
We were 7 movies. We went from Bridget Jones 1 to Bridget Jones 2. Bridget Jones 2, I'm sorry, is the worst fucking movie I've ever seen. It was so bad. Then we went to Jules and Julia, because my friend Amy and I both cook, so then we were like doing the Julia Child moment. And then we had actually just a little bit of energy. We thought we were going to Iron Chef some shit in the end, and that never happened. Then we went from that to Big Night. Have you seen Big Night?
No.
Oh, phenomenal movie with Stanley Tucci. These two Italian guys that come here from Italy to open up a restaurant in the 50s or 60s. And they're waiting for Louis Prima to come perform. Fucking phenomenal movie. So then we just started Googling good food movies. So after Big Night, we watched a 1989 movie with Helen Mirren called The Cook, The Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover.
Sounds like Food Fashion and Foolish Fornication.
That's what I thought. This movie, according to Roger Ebert, was, quote, hard to sit through. So it should have had an NC-17 rating. It didn't. The costumes, as you can imagine, were by Jean-Paul Gaultier. So it was very avant-garde. There's a lot of imagery. The food scenes, and it all took place in this restaurant, in this woman, Helen Mirren, is dating this horrible man who, but the whole, it looked like it was almost theatrical, right? So interesting colors. The food would come out and it's gorgeous. You know, these big, grandiose displays of, like, you know, crabs and lobsters, whatever. Visually stimulating. But then she keeps fucking this guy that she met at the restaurant who's sitting at this other table. So every scene is her, like, sitting at the table, her husband talking shit to her, her saying she's going to go have a cigarette in the bathroom. And then she walks through these different restaurant, like, areas of the restaurant, and her clothes keep changing. So essentially, I enjoyed that part.
Well, because you like fashion.
Yeah. So, and the costumes were phenomenal. So at the end of the movie, well, I won't tell you what happens, but I remember watching the movie and the last scene was really upsetting, and I just sort of sat there, and I was like, there's only one way to get over this. I gotta watch Under the Tuscan Sun.
One of my favorites.
Fabulous.
I love that movie.
I don't watch Chocolat and then Under the Tuscan Sun. So good.
Under the Tuscan Sun, I love that movie. Well, and speaking of Italy, okay, so going to Beirut in September,
yes.
Dubai in November. What do I get yesterday in an email from Living Social?
What?
Italy. Trip to Italy, Living Social.
How much? Which part?
There was Rome, a couple of nights in Rome, there was Venice, there was an apartment for a couple of nights somewhere in Tuscany, and depending on the dates, the price went different. Of course, I had to view the deal to find that out.
Yeah, because
I think LA wasn't one of the cities, but there's Chicago, New York, blah, 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 and like, it was like in September, October, $1,299, airfare, and all those accommodations, and a rental car.
Shut the fuck
for,
up.
There was like $12.99, $14.99. It just depended on what dates you were doing.
Hotel and airfare.
Hotel, airfare, and rental car was like $1,299, $14.99. It depended, but it was, L.A. wasn't on it. I think Washington, D.C., Chicago, New York, depending on where you were flying from.
Hold on 1 second. That sounds phenomenal. Welcome back, everyone. Sorry.